911-01.
A date which will live in infamy.
It began as a shimmering late summer day.
WCBS News Time 8:48. It's traffic and weather together. Tom Kaminsky, Chopper 880.
All right, Pat, we are just currently getting a look at the World Trade Center. We have something that has happened here at the World Trade Center.
352.
I think we just had an airplane crash east of here. It must be in the district area.
For cruiser 50 direct.
50 down 4.
Advise on channel 1, please. I have Delta 35, Cruiser 34, and Delta 352.
49
route. Turn on it, Delta. Okay, 1 unit at a time.
Motor 11.
Motor 11.
I'm direct, and there is visible smoke coming from that area. High visible smoke.
Motor 11, direct. Units, once again, keep all traffic on 1 Adam restricted until further notice. Units responding for the report of the plane crash, advise on 1 Adam one at a time. I have Motor 11, Cruiser 34, Cruiser 49, Delta 10, Delta 453, Delta 35, and Delta 352. Any other units, stand by response there unless Cruiser 50 notifies other.
Delta 23, I'm going to be clear 304, and I will be standing by for further instructions.
Cruiser 2310-4, thank you. Cruiser 50?
Cruiser
10-4, is that enough units to respond for now, or do you request additional?
No, stand by to see what we got.
10-4.
The 2 will respond for traffic.
Last unit responding for traffic?
Motor 2.
Motor 2 responding for traffic also. Motor
11.
Freedom itself was attacked this morning by a faceless coward, and freedom will be defended.
By now, you've seen the pictures, but it's been a long, agonizing and confusing 12 hours.
Oh, it was chaos. It's something out of a movie.
So, briefly, here's what we know about exactly what happened. 8:48 a.m., American Airlines Flight 11, hijacked en route from Boston to Los Angeles, slams into the North Tower of the World Trade Center, two-thirds of the way up the 110-story building.
We had seen a fireball, and I can tell you it appears as though something has gone into the World Trade Center.
20 minutes later, at 9:08 a.m., a United Airlines flight, number 175, also from Boston to Los Angeles, tips its wings and crashes into the South Tower.
Oh my God! Oh my God!
An incredible fireball, so remarkable, it didn't even seem real.
All you could see were papers and smoke just flying through and around the plaza. And we looked up about maybe 10 or 15 floors up, and the whole wall was blown out, and it was filled with flames. And everybody was just like, in awe. We had no idea what it could be. And suddenly our two managers in the office they came screaming in with an urgency that I've never, ever heard before in anybody's voice, saying, get out, get out, get out, get out. We had gotten down to about the 50th floor from the 80th floor, and there was a PA announcement, and they kept saying, there's a fire in World Trade number one, the firemen are attending to it, World Trade Center is secure, you may return to your offices, repeatedly, repeatedly, and everybody just stood in sort of disbelief.
Tom didn't go back. It was far from secure. Just minutes later, the second crash right into his office.
Looked like a plane rammed into the second building.
35 minutes after that, 9:43 a.m., American Airlines Flight 77, scheduled to fly to Los Angeles from Dulles Airport outside Washington, dives into the Pentagon, destroying one of the building's five sides.
I happened to hear a plane come through. It sounded like it was running normal.
10:10 a.m., the fourth hijacked plane, United 93 from Newark to San Francisco, crashes in a remote area 80 miles southeast of Pittsburgh.
Just coming down like it was going to land. Instead of landing, it just went nose straight into the ground.
In a little more than an hour, four horrific plane crashes, hundreds believed dead. But far worse was yet to come.
We got a 10-13, we got a second tower down. Hold on. I saw the plane hit the building, the flames and the billowing smoke. I saw the glass, metal, paper, and stone. Everything shattered and broke. I was there with my people, Engine Company 24. We marched into the building, got as far as the 35th floor. The black smoke and the heat was like nothing I'd seen in all of my years. With each step in that burning inferno, you could feel destiny near. Amidst all of the falling girders, the sheetrock and God knows what else, I tried to find the survivors, those who made it to the stairwells. I carried the wounded to safety, if that's what you might call the street. With bodies and boulders and metal all crashing down at your feet. As number two was collapsing, when only 10 floors still stood, everything was falling around me like it was made out of cardboard and wood. That's when I heard someone trapped underneath the debris. I started pulling at something, and that's when the fire got me. I was pinned beneath the rubble, the flames were licking my coat. The pain, the unbearable agony, and then that was all that she wrote. But I just wish I could tell you before I am taken away that I've seen a lot of this world, and there's something that I gotta say. I don't believe in politics. I believe in the human race. I believe in the goodness of people in New York or some faraway place. I believe in my daughter, and I believe in my wife, and may nobody's father be taken to avenge the loss of my life. Some people may call me a brave man, and this may very well be, but the firefighters of Kabul are just as brave men as me.
One year in, on the 11th of September, the ninth month, 9-1-1-0-1, an act of terrorism, the most serious attack on this country, the most devastating attack within the continental United States ever by a foreign force of some kind in more than 100 years.
I just walked all the way from West. Water! Anyone need water?
Lower Manhattan this afternoon became a deserted war zone. Inches of thick, choking dust, burned out cars, and mountains of rubble have replaced the bustle of the business world.
Everybody, keep going!
Everyone has been turned away, the journalists, The curious, even the residents who live here, will find themselves homeless tonight.
Hey, guys! Hey! We need a 20-foot straight ladder from over here. 20-foot straight. Yes, 20-foot straight ladder. Hey, we need a truck over there with you.
Only rescue workers are allowed beyond the barriers in their desperate search for victims. It is a truly overwhelming scene. Hundreds of exhausted firefighters and rescue workers climbing over mounds of concrete and tangled metal. A scene that certainly seems more familiar to Americans on a movie screen than in real life.
God bless their souls. All of them.
If you are watching Building 7 at the World Trade Center collapse,
according to the mayor of the city of New York. We do know that there are people definitely alive under the rubble of what was once the World Trade Center. That in itself, miraculous.
You are listening to Democracy Now! In Exile. The latest news we have is that There have been widespread attacks that include at least 3 commercial jet crashes. We now believe perhaps 4. 3 commercial jet crashes into significant buildings. In the first attack, a plane hit the North Tower of the World Trade Center in Manhattan shortly before 9 o'clock, followed by another plane into the second tower about 20 minutes later. Both towers later collapsed. About an hour later, a plane crashed into the Pentagon, part of which later collapsed. American Airlines told CNN that it lost 2 planes in tragic accidents. Flight 11 from Boston with 81 passengers and 11 crew aboard, and Flight 77 from Washington Dulles Airport with 58 passengers and 6 crew aboard. Both planes were en route to Los Angeles. United Airlines Flight 93 airliner headed from Newark, New Jersey to San Francisco crashed near Somerset, Pennsylvania. Police said initial reports indicated no survivors. It was not known if this was connected to the attacks. United also said it was deeply concerned about Flight 175 from Boston to Los Angeles. The Pentagon, the White House, the State Department, the Justice Department, the Capitol, the CIA, and all other government buildings in Washington have been evacuated. President Bush canceled an appearance in Florida to return to Washington, calling the crashes, quote, apparent terrorist attacks and, quote, a national tragedy. In the first ever national ground stop of aircraft, all flights nationwide have been stopped at their departure airports. All international flights were diverted to Canada. In New York, more than 10,000 rescue personnel have rushed to the scene. The entire downtown area of Manhattan, the mayor has recommended people evacuate, though we are in that area, and certainly so are hundreds of thousands of other people. Israel has evacuated all its missions around the world. In Chicago, the Sears Tower was evacuated. The United Nations in New York has been evacuated. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta was evacuated. CDC was preparing bioterrorism teams in case they become necessary. The New York Port Authority says it has closed all bridges and tunnels into the city. Today is primary day in New York. These elections have been canceled. You're listening to Democracy Now! As we go first to Robert Knight, who is on the line with us. He is right by the United Nations. Robert, can you talk about what you saw this morning?
Yes, indeed. I am reporting from an elevated location on the East River within line of sight to the United Nations as well as the World Trade Center and the Empire State Building. This morning at approximately 15 or 10 minutes before 9 o'clock, I was disturbed looking out of my window with the sound and the quick passage of what appeared to be a commercial plane. It was unusual because the general aviation rule in New York is that north and southbound traffic must travel over the Hudson River. This plane was too close to the center of Manhattan. As it traveled south, it caught my attention, and minutes later, a plane would indeed crash into the North Tower of the World Trade Center. I believe that is the plane that I saw. What is remarkable about what we now know to have been 2 crashes into the World Trade Center is the anomalous behavior in Manhattan now. The Empire State Building has been evacuated. The United Nations Secretariat and General Assembly buildings have been evacuated. As I look down at this very moment on the East River as the tide rises, there is an unusual pattern of fine-grained debris, which I believe it has washed up from lower Manhattan by this amount of time since the initial crashes. There have been closures of tunnels and bridges coming into New York, but as I look through the telescope, I can see torrents of pedestrian traffic moving eastbound across the 59th Street Bridge outside to move out of Manhattan. The bridge is closed to automobile traffic. Right now, as I look down on the FDR Highway, that is an expressway that runs on the east side of Manhattan, north and southbound, it has been closed to traffic for some hours, with the exception of police, fire, ambulance, and other emergency vehicles. It has been almost like a ghost highway, except for the ferrying and shuttling of ambulances with what few people they can bring back from what has to be a tremendously high toll of the explosions at the World Trade Center. As I look north at the United Nations at this very moment, it is being circled and ringed by a number of police boats, presumably under the assumption that the United Nations might well have also been a target. One other significant factor, Amy, I think that should be noted tactically or logistically. If indeed there is a central coordination of the crashing of these commercial airliners, I think it's significant that those that are missing are those that were outbound from the East Coast, whether from Boston or New York, for destinations on the West Coast. That means that these planes would have had the maximum amount of jet fuel in them, and if that was a factor, it would have been a logical one, so that when, for instance, the second plane crashed into the Southern Tower, there was a tremendous fireball. So it remains to be investigated, although it seems plausible that choosing a long-distance flight would provide more fuel for more deadly explosive effects.
Because they kept showing an East Jerusalem segment and the bombing of the two towers. They kept showing it again and again and again. They kept showing an East Jerusalem segment and the bombing of the two towers. They kept showing it again and again and again, showing it again and again and again, till it was like a hypnotizing, mesmerizing effect.
today's attacks on the Pentagon and the World Trade Center struck at modern symbols of American power and prestige.
Those towers are saying, look at us, we're important. And somebody has come along and said, you're not as important as you think.
The pictures of the destruction are destined to become images for the ages. The symbolism of this attack was impossible to ignore overseas.
The feeling is that throughout the world, the Americans are not as powerful as they were thought to be.
Thank God for another day. Thank God for the last 5 minutes. Because we are at war. And the only thing war means is a lot of people going to die. And it won't be the government. Because they very well protect it. It don't take a genius to figure out who it's going to be. It's 50,000 people, y'all. It don't take a genius to figure it out. Amen. One question for you folks. Do y'all know why we at war? Anybody on this train know why we at war?
The CIA and Saudi Arabia. The Bushes and the Bin Ladens. Did their connections cause America to turn a blind eye to terrorism?
There is a hidden agenda at the very highest levels of our government.
And the sad thing here is that thousands of Americans had to die in Egypt.
How can it be that the former president of the United States and the current president of the United States have business dealings with characters that need to be investigated?
8 weeks since the attacks, over 1,000 suspects and potential witnesses have been detained. Yet days after the hijackers took off from Boston aiming for the Twin Towers, a special charter flight out of the same airport whisked 11 members of Osama bin Laden's family off to Saudi Arabia. That did not concern the White House. Their official line is the bin Ladens are above suspicion, apart from Osama, the black sheep, who they say hijacked the family name. That's fortunate for the Bush family and the Saudi royal household, whose links with the bin Ladens could otherwise prove embarrassing.
But Newsnight has obtained evidence that the FBI was on the trail of other members of the bin Laden family for links to terrorist organizations before and after September 11th. This document is marked secret.
Case ID 199I WF213589. 199 is FBI code for case type. 9 would be murder. 65 would be espionage. 199 means national security. WF indicates Washington field office special agents were investigating ABL because of its relationship with the World Assembly of Muslim Youth, WAMI, a suspected terrorist organization. ABL is Abdullah bin Laden, president and treasurer of WAMI. This is the sleepy Washington suburb of Falls Church, Virginia, where almost every home displays the Stars and Stripes. On this unremarkable street, at 3411 Silver Maple Place, we located the former home of Abdullah and another brother, Omar, also an FBI suspect. It's conveniently close to WAMI.
The World Assembly of Muslim Youth is in this building, in a little room in the basement, at 5613 Leesburg Pike. And here, just a couple blocks down the road at 5913 Leesburg, is where four of the hijackers that attacked New York and Washington are listed as having lived.
The U.S. Treasury has not frozen WAMI's assets, and when we talked to them, they insisted they are a charity. Yet, just weeks ago, Pakistan expelled WAMI operatives, and India claimed that WAMI was funding an organization linked to bombings in Kashmir. And the Philippines military has accused WAMI of funding Muslim insurgency. The FBI did look into WAMI, but for some reason, agents were pulled off the trail.
The FBI wanted to investigate these guys. This is not something that they didn't want to do. They wanted to. They weren't permitted to.
Yeah, the secret file fell into the hands of national security expert Joe Trento. The Washington spook tracker has been looking into the FBI's allegations about WAMI.
They've had connections to Osama bin Laden's people. They've had connections to Muslim cultural and financial aid groups that have terrorist connections. And they fit the pattern of groups that the Saudi royal family and Saudi community of princes, the 20,000 princes, have funded who've engaged in terrorist activity. Now, Do I know that Whammy has done anything that's illegal? No, I don't know that. Do I know that as far back as 1996, the FBI was very concerned about this organization? I do.
Newsnight has uncovered a long history of shadowy connections between the State Department, CIA, and the Saudis. The former head of the American Visa Bureau in Jeddah is Michael Springman.
In Saudi Arabia, I was repeatedly ordered by high-level State Department officials to issue visas to unqualified applicants. These were essentially people with no ties either to Saudi Arabia or to their home country. I complained bitterly at the time there. I returned to the United States. I complained to the State Department here, to the General Accounting Office, to the Bureau of Diplomatic Security, and to the Inspector General's Office. I was met with silence.
I, George Herbert Walker Bush.
By now, Bush Sr., once CIA director, was in the White House. Springman was shocked to find this wasn't visa fraud. Rather, state and CIA were playing the great game.
What I was protesting was, in reality, an effort to bring recruits rounded up by Osama bin Laden to the United States for terrorist training by the CIA, who would then be returned to Afghanistan to fight against the then Soviet Union.
The attack on the World Trade Center in 1993 did not shake the State Department's faith in the Saudis, nor did the attack on the American barracks at Khobar Towers in Saudi Arabia 3 years later, in which 19 Americans died. FBI agents began to feel their investigation was being obstructed.
Would you be surprised to find out that FBI agents are a bit frustrated that they can't be looking into some Saudi connections?
I would never be surprised with that. They are cut off at the hip sometimes by supervisors for given shots that are being called from Washington at the highest level.
I showed lawyer Michael Wilde our FBI documents. One of the Khobar Towers bombers was represented by Wilde. He thought he had useful intelligence for the U.S. He also represents a Saudi diplomat who defected to the USA with 14,000 documents, which Wilde claims implicates Saudi citizens in financing terrorism and more. Wilde met with FBI men who told him they were not permitted to read all the documents. Nevertheless, he tried to give them to the agents.
Take these with you. We're not going to charge you for the copies. Keep them. Do something with them. Get some bad guys with them. They refused.
In the Hall of Mirrors, that is the U.S. intelligence community, Wilde, a former U.S. federal attorney, said the FBI field agents wanted the documents, but they were told to see no evil.
You see a difference between the rank-and-file counterintelligence agents who are regarded by some as the motor pool of the FBI who drive following diplomats, and the people who are getting the shots called at the highest levels of our government, who have a different agenda, if you would. It's unconscionable.
The state wanted to keep the pro-American Saudi royal family in control of the world's biggest oil spigot, even at the price of turning a blind eye to any terrorist connection, so long as America was safe. In recent years, CIA operatives had other reasons for not exposing Saudi-backed suspects.
If you recruited somebody who's a member of a terrorist organization, who happens to make his way here to the United States, and even though if you're not in touch with that person anymore, but you've used him in the past, it would be very unseemly if he were to be arrested by the FBI and word got back that he had once been on the payroll of the CIA. But we're talking about blowback. We're talking about embarrassing, career-destroying blowback for intelligence officials.
Does the Bush family also have to worry about political blowback? The younger Bush made his first million 20 years ago with an oil company partly funded by Salim bin Laden's chief U.S. representative. Young George also received fees as director of a subsidiary of Carlyle Corporation, a little-known private company which has, in just a few years of its founding, become one of America's biggest defense contractors. His father, Bush Sr., is also a paid advisor. And what became embarrassing was the revelation that the bin Ladens held a stake in Carlyle, sold just after September 11th.
You have a key relationship between the Saudis and the former president of the United States, who happens to be the father of the current president of the United States. And you have all sorts of questions about where does policy begin and where does good business and good profits for the company, Carlyle, end.
I received a telephone call from a high-placed member of a U.S. intelligence agency. He tells me that while there have always been constraints on investigating Saudis, under George Bush, it's gotten much worse. After the elections,
The agencies were told to back off investigating the bin Ladens and Saudi royals, and that angered agents. I am told that since September 11th, the policy has been reversed. FBI headquarters told us they could not comment on our findings. A spokesman said there are lots of things that only the intelligence community knows and that no one else ought to know.
Good evening. I would like to report on the state of our war against the American people. We're mounting a sustained campaign to crack down on every American and every person of every faith, every nation, and to bring them to justice. All missions are being executed according to plan, without warning or provocation. Americans are being swept up in an international dragnet. Thousands of FBI agents are on the trail of other citizens here and abroad. It has everything to do with hate and evil and murder and prejudice. America's strong.
Federal agents, we are armed!
I want to let you know there's a quiet anger in America that really is real.
I never thought I'd come under attack. Now the world is changing, there's no going back. Danger up my shoulder and it's gaining fast. Questions I'm afraid of, but I have to ask. Who are they? And why do they hate us? Well, I was raised to believe in this American dream. All the greatness and glory, the way that it seemed. How God was on our side and God doesn't lie. So why do all these innocent people have to die? Who are they? And why do they hate us? Every color in the cloth has a history to tell. Ships across the ocean and the Liberty Bell. Heroes in the monuments, I know them by name. But now their granite jaws are shattered and their eyes are full of rain. My neighbor, she's a foreigner, I can't pronounce her name. When she talks about her homeland, her face fills with pain. She says she lost her children when the missiles hit. I don't know what to say, so I just change the subject. Who are they? And why do they hate us? I see the TV news and they're burning my flag in some faraway land where it's just another rag. The looks on their faces, they make me freeze. How in the world did we make so many enemies? Who are they? And why do they hate us? Rage and retribution won't bring anybody back. Justice is alive, so subtle and sublime. Well, I'd like to believe them, but we're running out of time. I never paid much attention, guess I should have known. Every faraway country is somebody's home. Empires rise and empires fall. The world is big enough, there should be room for us all. Who are they? And why do they hate us? Thank you.
Not in our son's name. Our son Greg is among the many missing from the World Trade Center attack. Since we first heard the news, we have shared moments of grief, comfort, hope, despair, fond memories with his wife, the two families, our friends and neighbors, his loving colleagues at Cantor Fitzgerald Eastmead, and all the grieving families that daily meet at the Hotel Pierre. We see our hurt and anger reflected among everybody we meet. We cannot pay attention to the daily flow of news about this disaster, but we read enough of the news to sense that our government is heading in the direction of violent revenge with the prospect of sons, daughters, parents, friends in distant lands dying, suffering, and nursing further grievances against us. It is not the way to go. It will not avenge our son's death, not in our son's name. Our son died a victim of an inhuman ideology. Our actions should not serve the same purpose. Let us grieve. Let us reflect and pray. Let us think about a rational response that brings real peace and justice to our world, but let us not, as a nation, add to the inhumanity of our times. My husband, Orlando, wrote that after 3 days of conversations that the two of us had in going in and out of shock and despair at not only what happened on September 11th, but the growing conviction that our son was lost. We could not grieve privately only. We feel that it's bigger than all of us, that it's not as if he died in a car accident or in just some random accident. This affects all of us, and we are making every effort we can at this point to lend our voices to the rapidly coalescing and growing peace movement in this country and internationally. We feel very strongly that any Afghani death resounds in our family, that people should not be killed in the interest of stopping terrorism. There are other ways, and our government must rise above the bloodthirstiness that we hear reflected in the media and from our administration.
Us people are just poems. We're 90% metaphor, with a leanness of meaning approaching hyperdistillation. And once upon a time, we were moonshine, rushing down the throat of a giraffe. Yes, rushing down the long hall, despite what the PA announcement says. Yes, rushing down the long hall, down the long stairs in a building so tall that it will always be there. It's part of a pair. There on the bow of Noah's Ark, the most prestigious couple just kicking back, parked against a perfectly blue sky on a morning beatific in its Indian summer breeze. On the day that America fell to its knees after strutting around for a century without saying thank you or please. And the shock was subsonic and the smoke was deafening between the setup and the punchline, because we were all on time for work that day. We all boarded that plane for it to fly. And then while the fires were raging, we all climbed up on the windowsill, and then we all held hands and jumped into the sky. And every burrow looked up when it heard the first blast, and then every dumb action movie was summarily surpassed, and the exodus uptown by foot and motor car looked more like war than anything I've seen so far. So far. So far. So far. sinners and ingenious, a poetic specter so far gone that every jackass newscaster was struck dumb and stumbling over, oh my God, and this is unbelievable, and on and on. And I'll tell you what, while we're at it, you can keep the Pentagon, you can keep the propaganda, you can keep each and every TV that's been trying to convince me to participate in some prep school punk's plan to perpetuate retribution. Perpetuate retribution. Even as the blue toxic smoke of our lesson in retribution is still hanging in the air, and there's ash on our shoes. And there's ash in our hair. And there's a fine silt on every mantle from Hell's Kitchen to Brooklyn. And the streets are full of stories, sudden twists and near misses. And soon every open bar is crammed to the rafters with tales of narrowly averted disasters. And the whiskey is flowing like never before. As all over the country, folks just shake their heads and pour.
What happened last week affected us. We all ride in airplanes. We go inside big buildings. We could feel that on a very intimate level, but now it's done. We worry about it happening again, but in Iraq or Afghanistan or Turkey or in many places across the world, you don't have to worry about it happening the next day or in Palestine, because it's going to. Shortly after this happened, Ariel Sharon called off peace talks and occupied Jericho.
So here's a toast to all the folks that live in Palestine, Afghanistan, Iraq, El Salvador. Here's a toast to all the folks living on the Pine Ridge Reservation under the stone cold gaze of Mount Rushmore. Here's a toast to all those nurses and doctors who daily provide women with a choice, who stand down a threat the size of Oklahoma City just to listen to a young woman's voice. Here's a toast to all those folks on death row right now, awaiting the executioner's guillotine, who are shackled there with dread and can only escape into their heads to find peace in a form of a dream. Peace in a form of a dream. Peace in the form of a dream. Cause take away our PlayStations and we are a third world nation under the thumb of some blue blood royal son who stole the Oval Office and that phony election. I mean, it don't take a weatherman to look around and see the weather. Jeb said he'd deliver Florida, folks, and boy, did he ever. And we hold these truths to be self-evident. Number one, George W. Bush is not president. Number two, America is not a true democracy. And number three, the media is not fooling me. Cause I'm a poem heeding hyperdistillation, and I've got no room for a lie so verbose. Yeah. Yes, I'm looking out over my whole human family, and I'm raising my glass in a toast. Here's to our last drink of fossil fuels. May we vow to get off of this sauce. Shoo away the swarms of commuter planes. Find that train ticket we lost. Cause once upon a time, the line followed the river and peeked into all the backyards. And the laundry was waving and the graffiti was teasing us from brick walls and bridges. We were rolling over ridges, through valleys, under stars. I dream of touring like Duke Ellington in my own railroad car. Yeah. Of waiting on the tall, blonde wooden benches in a grand station aglow with grace, and then standing out on the platform and feeling the air on my face. Give back the night its distant whistle. Give the darkness back its soul. Give the big oil companies the finger, finally, and relearn how to rock and roll. Yes, the lessons are all around us, and the truth is waiting there. It's time to pick through the rubble, clean the streets, and clear the air. Get our government to pull its big dick out of the sand of someone else's desert. Put it back in its pants with the hypocritical chants of freedom forever. Cause when one lone phone rang in 2001 at 10 after 9 on 911, which was the number we all call when that lone phone rang right off the wall, right off our desk and down the long hall, down the long stairs in a building so tall that the whole world turned just to watch it fall. While we're at it, remember the first time around? The bomb, the rider truck, the parking garage, the princess that didn't even feel the pee. Remember joking around in our apartment on Avenue D? Can you imagine how many paper coffee cups would have to change their design following a fantastical reversal of the New York skyline? It was a joke at the time. And that was just a few years ago, so let the record show that the FBI was all over that case, that the plot was obvious and in everybody's face, and scoping that scene religiously, the CIA, or is it KGB, committing countless crimes against humanity with this kind of eventuality as its excuse for abuse after expensive abuse, and they didn't have a clue. Look, another window to see through. Way up here, on 104th floor, look, another key, another door. 10% literal, 90% metaphor. 3,000 some poems disguised as people on an almost too perfect day. Must be more than pawns in some asshole's passion play. So now it's your job, and it's my job to make it that way. To make sure they didn't die in vain. Shh. Baby, listen.